If an athlete has something they have used before and it works, and it might not adhere to necessarily what you're hearing from me today, there's nothing really to stop you doing that thing again, because if it's repeatable and you're getting the results and the athlete's getting PRs, we don't need to, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it type scenario. And if you did want to try something, I'd probably suggest if you've got something that works and you want to try something different, do that at an event that doesn't mean as much to the lifter.
Hi, Hayden. It's my pleasure to have you on Evidence Strong Show. If you could briefly introduce yourself.
Hey, my name is Dr. Hayden Pritchard. I am a husband and father of two. I have a just turned one-year-old and a soon-to-be four-year-old boy. So life is pretty full-on at the moment at home, as you can imagine as a young father. I am an online powerlifting and strength coach with Barbell and Beyond, which I've just recently teamed up with them to provide that. I am a former New Zealand representative powerlifter. So I went to two IPF Classic World Championships back in 2013. We went to Russia and 2014, we went to South Africa. So two pretty cool trips and some of the very first IPF Classic World Championships, which the standard of competition has increased substantially since then. And it's pretty cool to see the growth in the sport of powerlifting. I've also performed weightlifting at a national level. So that's sort of my background in strength sports, I guess. Like, I just have always enjoyed training and pushing myself, and just finished a nice hard leg session actually before we started recording today. And then my academic backgrounds, I completed a PhD in strength and conditioning from AUT. I graduated in 2017. And my thesis was about tapering for maximal strength, which is what we're looking to discuss today.
Yeah, you are an expert, so I'm very excited to pick your brain on all the things taper. And let's start with some kind of definition. So what taper?
So the definition I tend to kind of go back to, I guess, is one from 2003, Majika and Padilla. And they define tapering as a progressive nonlinear reduction of the training load during a variable period of time in an attempt to reduce the physiological and psychological stress of daily training and optimize sports performance. So I've always used that definition, and I have it written so that I can kind of go back to it, because I think it kind of summarizes a whole bunch of different things and probably also puts, I guess, some constraints on what we would define as a taper versus a peak. And that's probably something worth briefly mentioning, is the taper is, you know, obviously a reduction in that training load. And you'll notice in that definition, it refers to a nonlinear reduction of training load, which some tapers would be, you know, not technically meeting that definition. But in my mind, even though they might be, you know, a linear reduction, they still do the job of tapering or peaking. And so the whole idea of that taper really is we put in all of this training as athlete, and the whole, you know, point of that, I guess, if we're in a competitive sport, is that we put everything together and we have, you know, our best performance on the day that it counts, which is the day of competition. And so that's why a taper is so important, is because, you know, months, years, whatever it may be of hard work, if you get a taper period right, or you get your peaking right, and you put your best performance out there on the day that it matters, then that's awesome, right? But if you're 2 or 3% off, that can be the difference sometimes between, you know, getting a medal or not getting a medal, or coming first versus coming second. So it is a really important point in training. And, you know, if we get it right, it can be really, really helpful in terms of optimizing that sports performance and really getting the best out of the athlete. Because the worst thing you'd want really would be, you know, to have your best in the gym and then not get to actually do that on the platform when it matters.
It still can happen because there are lots of variables, but the role of a taper is to prepare the athlete to be at the best physical shape, at least. Although,
yeah, and I think that's probably a very fair point. And I think when we, you know, anything, when we talk about training, we kind of have to remember the athlete is a complex system, right? And there are so many different parts that can interfere or, you know, impact that. And I guess, you know, we talk of competition, there's often travel, sometimes that's international travel, you know, being in New Zealand and traveling 30 hours to get to a competition on the other side of the world is a pretty big undertaking physically. It can have quite a big impact, not even to mention the change in the diet, the food, the sleep patterns, all of that stuff. So you're right, we can get the training part right, but sometimes actually there's other pieces that we have to consider in terms of, you know, what leads to optimal performance and what can impact us on a competition day for sure.
Are there any golden rules for taper? So please give us some kind of structure so then we can go into details and discuss all the aspects of taper, but the golden rules, the goods.
The main thing we want to do is reduce fatigue. That's the biggest thing that we can possibly do, so that we're not coming into an event feeling really beat up and just not able to actually perform. And so one of the biggest drivers, at least from my perspective for a strength athlete, is that training volume is probably one of the most, I'm not going to say harmful because it does have beneficial effects, right? But it probably impacts your fatigue the most. You know, I always think of it going to those extremes, right? If you were to just do a single heavy set, you know, build up and do one heavy set, as opposed to doing a, say, 10 by 10 volume training or some German volume training or something like that, one of those things is going to lead you to feel completely beat up and fatigued a whole lot more than the other. So that kind of shows me, or I like to think of it that way, because it makes me realize that the volume that we have, right, it's not as specific to the task that we're wanting to maintain. And so when we're thinking of holding on to our fitness, it's better that we're doing something a bit more specific, which to me typically means higher intensity, but lower volume, because the more volume we pile on, generally the more that we will fatigue an athlete. Now that volume could be, like I said there, with, you know, 10 by 10 sets, something ridiculous that a strength athlete, I don't imagine, is going to think of doing 2 days before an event. But, you know, the other opposite could be true as well. If you were doing really, you know, a high number of sets of heavy singles, that too would be fatiguing. So I like to think of the real golden rule is, how can we make sure that we don't overload the athlete in terms of training volume, but we can still keep some intensity in that training that we're doing. And that tends to be the biggest thing, is reducing volume, but trying to maintain intensity. Some of the literature will talk about potentially increasing or maybe small decreases in intensity. But at the end of the day, we still want to keep it as a strength stimulus, which if we think about that, that's generally probably above an 85% 1RM type workload during that taper, but substantially reducing the total training volume. Again, this will depend on what the athlete has done before. So if someone has done, you know, an overreaching block or something like that, which may have been, you know, more common in the powerlifting scene several years ago, they might need to reduce training by a much greater amount than someone who might have been doing a more moderate amount of training throughout their training block. So that's where that individualization piece comes in. However, we're still generally thinking reduce volume and try and keep the intensity relatively high.
So we're keeping in mind that the sports we are interested in performing would be powerlifting, weightlifting, what else, strongman, maybe CrossFit to some degree, although endurance component will be huge there too. So we're thinking explosive or single repetition exertion of strength or power, and how to get there. So the intensity, so keeping the weights up, that has to stay because that's what is required at the competition. Volume produces more fatigue, therefore, and it's not very specific to the performance in the competition, so could be potentially reduced.
Yeah, you've nailed it. And when we look at sort of the recommendations that they're classically given, it would be something like a 30 to 70% reduction in training volume. So the literature has often talked about training volume in terms of like total tonnage, so sets times reps times load. We could probably simplify that and simply think of something like, you know, training sets. And if you were doing 5 sets previously, you know, in your standard sort of training block, let's say, just as an example, you might go from doing 5 sets per week to say 1 to 3 sets in those tapering weeks. That would get you sort of a 30 to 70% training load reduction, but you might maintain the workloads that you were doing previously. So if some of those, you know, you might have been doing doubles or singles around maybe 90%-ish, let's say, you'd be able to maintain that piece, but you would significantly reduce the number of sets, or at least that would be the way we would go, you know, we'd be looking at going about it according to those recommendations. And that might happen over, say, a 1 to 2 week period. And then you'd probably also combine that with a period of training cessation. And typically that will be somewhere between 2 and 5 days off. So when I say 2 days, I mean 48 hours. So if someone was competing on a Saturday, they might do their last session, which might be a very, very minimal session. And that might be on, say, the Thursday, they have the Friday off, and then they have the event on the Saturday, something like that.
Awesome. So I'm very compelled to ask you, how would you decide whether 30 or 70% is appropriate for a particular lifter?
Yeah, there's going to be a few things that we think about with this. And there's going to be the individual aspect of, you know, how is the athlete recovering from training? Are they feeling beat up? Are we seeing that their performances have been starting to reduce? Anything like that. You know, if we're seeing any signs that they may have been overreaching in the lead up to the taper, potentially we're going to be looking at the higher end of that range. So you might be looking closer to 70% if you've got an athlete who hasn't been feeling that great. And potentially even with that athlete, you might be looking at doing a longer taper as well. So looking more towards that 2 week mark rather than maybe a 1 week. Again, we're looking at what's in front of you and what the athlete is actually feeling and trying to individualize, because that's the hardest part, right? Is that we can have these nice golden rules, but actually they change depending on what the athlete's feeling and experiencing at that time. Maybe there's more life stress as well. That's probably the other part to think about this, is if an athlete is also, you know, having some significant life events, they may need to taper a little bit more as well. Because when we think of the whole system or the whole human, that person will be impacted by those other life stresses as well. So as a coach, you're wanting to think about more than just the training, but also considering what might be happening in their life. And if there's ways that people might be able to minimize some of those other stresses at that time, that's probably also something to think about as we lead up to a competition in terms of freshening up the athlete, is it might not just be the training that we're thinking of during the tapering. It could actually be, is there a way to kind of minimize a little bit of life stress during that time? Won't always be possible, but for some, and potentially for a really competitive athlete, that might be something that they would look to do, you know, minimize the amount that they're going to work or all those sorts of things, if they can. Obviously, obviously that's not doable for a lot of us. And then I guess if we're thinking of the other end of that, if an athlete has been feeling really fresh, has been hitting really good weights and is feeling like $1 million, maybe you don't want to change too much. So potentially you might go towards the lower end of those volume reductions. And I've known many people that have also had really good results pretty much by continuing training as they were right up to the event, but just taking 2 or 3 days off immediately prior to the event, just simply because that the amount of training they were doing, they were actually able to recover from. And so we can kind of see both of those aspects, I guess, there. You know, one of those is the taper and the other one is we're just trying to get them to feel a little bit fresher and peak for the meet. Because sometimes, yeah, what they were doing before is clearly working, you know, and we've probably all seen or heard of that athlete who PBs all their lifts 2 weeks out and then they don't feel fresh, they don't feel nice because they didn't do enough during their taper and they end up having a really poor performance. So that's where there's probably even a secondary part to that, that it's not just looking at their training and giving them a prescription based off this. It's probably actually worthwhile for coaches to keep good records of what their athletes have done before competitions and the results of those tapers, because we have quite broad, you know, general guidelines here. There's going to be that individualization aspect. And so if you can try a couple of different tapers, especially maybe on some less important meets or events, and you can see, hey, it actually works better when we do, you know, a bigger reduction or a smaller reduction with this athlete, potentially you can take those learnings and you can apply those at the next meet. And you mentioned earlier on about how there's so much more to a taper and a good performance than just the training. And I think that's part of it as well. If an athlete has something they have used before and it works, and it might not adhere to necessarily what you're hearing from me today, there's nothing really to stop you doing that thing again. Because if it's repeatable and you're getting the results and the athlete's getting PRs, we don't need to, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it type scenario. And if you did want to try something, I'd probably suggest if you've got something that works and you want to try something different, do that at an event that doesn't mean as much to the lifter, so that you can kind of, I guess, test, you know, do like an A-B test. Well, we normally do this and this was the result. I want to try something a little bit different. I want to try and keep a little bit higher intensity during that last week. I'm going to practice that at the local meet. Cool, it worked. I can try that at the big meet. No, it didn't work. I'll go back to doing A again. And I think that's part of, you know, one of the best things you can do is keep good records and good training logs and good training diaries, so that you can then actually learn from what you're doing with the lifter and apply that again. Because when we look at research, we're always looking at averages. We're looking at what happens across a group in terms of the probabilities and the statistics. But sometimes you might be working with an individual who was the outlier in that group, and they might just love training really hard all the way up and it works really well. And hey, if that's the case, you don't want to hamstring them by being stuck by a specific rule that may not apply. So I just wanted to put that out there as well.
Yeah, very important aspect. So coaches are researchers too. They employ scientific methods on a daily basis with the N equals one. So with one person at a time.
Yeah, 100%.
Awesome. Could we go through some examples of tapers? Because there are a few types of taper I learned from your papers. So could you tell us a little bit about each one of them?
We typically talk about 4 different types of tapers, or I guess 3 high-level groups of tapers. So there's a step taper, a linear taper, and then 2 types of what we call exponential tapers. And all of those names kind of refer to the style or the way that we would go about reducing this total training volume. So a step taper intuitively is a little bit just like you think of with a step, right? We have a high level, it drops, and it goes down to another level. So that's pretty simple, and that tends to be quite a common approach. And I put down some numbers from some of the different studies that we did, and I'll just give you this and then I'll give you the full details of those other ones. But weightlifters, 36% of the weightlifters, and these are some survey studies that we did with various strength athletes, 36% of weightlifters use a linear taper, 33% use a step taper. For international level North American powerlifters, 30% use a step taper and 28% a linear taper. For strongman, over half of those athletes used a step taper. And then for Highland Games, about 36% used a step taper and 33% a linear taper. So you can see instantly there, the 2 most, I guess, simple ways of thinking about a taper tend to be ones that the athletes reported as being the most common. So going back to the step taper, the way that I sort of, well, the simplest way to describe this is, again, let's go with that example of typically in training, we're doing 5 working sets or 5 hard sets across those exercises, just to keep everything blank and simple. If we were doing a step taper and we were wanting to get between that 30 to 70% reduction in training volume, we might go from doing 5 sets across the board to doing 3 sets or 2 sets, you know, and just going, we're gone from 5 here, right? The next week, we're suddenly just doing 2 sets, boom, and one foul swoop, you know, and then you just maintain that for the duration of your taper. So if that was a 2-week taper, you would be going from doing 5 sets 3 weeks out and then just doing 2 sets for the next 2 weeks. So you can see how that works. I would say a step taper is probably more common when people are doing a shorter duration taper, because you can imagine imagine taking away, you know, 70% of volume for 2 whole weeks, unless you've had a crazy training block prior to that, you're probably going to end up not quite doing enough, or at least that would be my perception there. Whereas the linear taper is a little bit different to the step taper in that, as the name suggests, we're kind of just cutting things consistently and gradually throughout. So if you were doing 5 sets, let's again just go with that 3 weeks out scenario, you would go 5 sets that session, then 4 sets the next session, then 3 sets the next session, then 2, and you're just gradually taking away volume as we go. The exponential kind of does things a little bit differently. So we have a slow decay and a fast decay, and the slow decay is basically a more gradual decline at the start and then a rapid decline at the end. So it might go, you know, 5, 4, 2, 1. So it slowly reduces and then boom, it drops off the cliff towards the end as we get closer to the event. And then the other way would be the opposite of that. So we have a fast decline at the start. So it might go 5 and then 2 and then 1 or something like that. So just kind of the different ways of doing the same things. And if you think logically about it, you can kind of understand when you might apply different ones or different examples of those. So the step is very simple. So I think a lot of athletes will intuitively go to that because I can just go from doing whatever sets I was doing. And I know for the week before the comp, I just do from 5 sets to 2 sets. Linear probably takes a little bit more thinking, but is also quite simple because I just take away a set each time I train or something along those lines. And then the exponentials, and you didn't see a lot of that being used or being reported as being used by the athletes. You know, they're just a little bit more complex, but there are situations where it would make sense. If we've trained really, really hard, you might need to take away quite a lot at the start to get the recovery happening, right? Whereas if you've not been training too hard, the other exponential might be quite good because then you're only reducing it by a large amount at the end as we get closer to meet day, but you're maintaining a lot of that volume. So for someone who hasn't been training as hard, that may be a better option. So you can kind of see that the different reasons why we might use different tapers, but I honestly think a lot of it comes back to the simplicity of implementing it. And when we're looking at these different options, the step and the linear tend to be the most common. And I would say it's often just because that's the simplest way to do things. Or maybe the athletes didn't quite understand as well what the exponential meant, because a lot of us probably do that gradually, even if you just look over a training block, right? We're kind of gradually removing some of the volume and then at the end we sharply reduce it. So you could even argue that even if you were doing a linear taper, potentially it was an exponential one, but we were just looking too close in that last couple of weeks versus zooming out a little bit and looking at, you know, 3 or so weeks.
Okay, now the most scientific questions of all of them. So what is the mechanism of taper? Why does it work?
You're probably going to be a little bit disappointed, Alex, but to be honest, there's not a whole lot of strong evidence that points to any kind of one reason or one thing. So there's been some studies that have talked about, you know, hormonal changes. So looking, is there a more anabolic state? So looking at things like the testosterone to cortisol ratio. And with that, you know, some studies have indicated that that improves or that is a little bit better, which I guess would indicate that we're in a more anabolic state. So we're able to grow more muscle. But in reality, how much muscle are you going to grow in a week or two? You know, it's pretty insubstantial. So to me, that would be more potentially that could lead to better recovery in terms of, like, you know, the micro tears to the muscle or the muscle damage that we get from individual training sessions. But again, there's not a whole lot of evidence. There's not a whole lot of strong evidence. And one of our studies, when we measured that, to be honest, we used salivary measures and the variation that we got in those samples was just wild. So essentially, we were never going to see anything because we just had too much standard deviation. It was just, there was so much noise in that data, which was disappointing because it was probably the most expensive thing that we measured and yet it told us nothing. So that was extremely disappointing to spend, you know, several thousand dollars on salivary analysis, spending time, you know, a day in a lab trying to analyze that with one of my other biochemistry buddies, and yet we saw basically nothing. So that was extremely disappointing in our own research, but even in the wider, you know, because I wanted to see something. I wanted to know that there's some cool mechanism that's happening here, but unfortunately for us, the measures that we took, it was just too variable, and so we didn't see any changes there. In terms of other changes that we would think, I think this, you know, one of the most likely ones could be a neuromuscular change, because again, we're looking at really short time frames. And so, you know, looking at getting greater hypertrophy in 2 weeks is probably not possible, but having a neuromuscular system that fires more effectively potentially could be, or having better coordination and movement efficiency. And so we used a proxy to measure the neuromuscular activation just of a counter movement jump, because obviously if you think about power production, very high neuromuscular demands. And so we looked at the counter movement jump and we did see positive changes in that. Obviously that wasn't one of our key performance measures, although it is a performance measure. We were using that predominantly to kind of look at, is there a neuromuscular change? Because there's good, you know, correlations between a counter movement jump and neuromuscular recovery and efficiency and changes. So we tried to use that as a proxy to not have to go too, I guess, deep in terms of what were the measures we were having to use.
Okay, and last question, I guess, coming from, do we really need a taper? Could we just stop exercising 3 days before and just go to the competition? Wouldn't it? Because that will be a reduction in in both intensity and volume,
wouldn't
it be the same, yes or no, and why?
So training cessation is a really interesting one, and something that when in my PhD, we did the interviews of New Zealand powerlifters, we did a training cessation specific study, and we did a proper taper, you know, week study as well. And so typically what we tend to see is that if someone only has a few days off, this potentially can achieve a lot of those goals of a taper in terms of reducing fatigue and improving performance, you know, as a byproduct of that reduction of fatigue. And so I would 100% say it's a valid way to do it, especially as I said earlier, if we're not pushing an athlete super hard and going, you know, lots and lots and lots of training volume and fatigue accumulated, then why do we need to have a drastic taper? I don't think it's always necessary. There are definitely times when it can make a difference, and there are some people who will respond really well to it. But there are others who will actually train right up until, you know, that couple of days out. It'll look pretty standard, maybe a little bit less overall training volume, but it works. And some people get good results from that. And so I definitely wouldn't say you have to taper, but you probably want to do something to peak. And a training cessation could be a valid option for many people, especially if you are training at a overall training level or amount that isn't causing a massive amount of fatigue for the person. If they're able to turn up to training each day, feel relatively fresh and perform well in training, I can't argue as to taper being necessary. You know, even though that's what I did my whole PhD on, I would probably say training cessation would probably work fine. And it's coming down to the individual athlete. What do they need? And would this be something that could work for them in their specific unique context? Just to make a couple of other comments on training cessation as well, because I know this is something people often think about and stress about, is, oh no, I'm going on holiday and I have to take a few days off. What I tend to think is that, what's that? Yeah, exactly. You're losing all your gains. If it's only a few days, you know, you're going away for a long weekend or something, just take the time off. Don't worry about it. It's fine. It'll be absolutely fine to come back, you know, take Friday, Saturday, Sunday off and come back on Monday and just start your next training week. If you're going to be having, you know, even up to a week, you could probably get away with that. You're likely to maintain pretty much all of the progress that you had previously. And so that's probably why back when I started powerlifting, a common recommendation was just take the week off. So you'd train hard all the way up, you'd have a full 7 days off. Now, for me personally, I found that didn't work too great just because I felt a little bit sluggish and the coordination didn't feel quite right. And so for me, I didn't like the idea of a full week off. Some people found it, you know, really nice, but not me. I'm like, oh, it doesn't quite vibe with me. I feel like I'm not greasing the groove, you know, things aren't moving as well, especially when I did Olympic weightlifting. That for me, I feel like you kind of have to do something in terms of that looks like the movements. But again, on that time off scenario, you know, a couple of days, take it off. A full week, you're probably fine to take it off. But if we think of beyond that period, if you know that you're going to have limited access to the gym or you're overseas on holiday, but you don't want to lose all of your gains, you can get away with training a very, very small amount. Like I'm saying, you know, thinking one session per week, maybe two sessions per week. If you keep that a pretty specific and focused session, you could get away with several months, you know, of training once per week and maintain a large percentage of your gains. So long as the session that you do, as we talked about earlier, is specific and focused, and it's, you know, if the quality you want to maintain is strength, it probably needs to be, you know, a bit of intensity in that session, maybe some heavy singles and a couple of back offs or something like that. It's essentially what you could do for an extended period of time, maintain most of your progress, and, you know, we then don't have to get scared about going on holiday and losing all of our gains. We could try and get, you know, if you're going on a big overseas excursion for 4 weeks, if you can get to the gym once a week while you're over there, you're probably going to come back and be absolutely fine and not have taken, you know, much of a backward step at all, I would say. So I just wanted to get to that because I know that training cessation and, you know, taking time away from the gym for some people can feel quite scary. But in reality, if you do that wisely, you know, and you know that you've got this period of time coming up, you're not going to be able to access a gym often, just get a session in a week, make it specific to your goals, and you'll probably be absolutely fine. And if you want to read a bit more of that, I did write an article for Weightlifting House called Don't Fear Rest back in 2019. So if anyone wants to go back and read that, feel free to have a look at that. I think it's really nice. And to be honest, sometimes I think we write those articles for ourselves because, you know, it's like everyone else. I'm like, I'm going on holiday at the end of this month for 10 days. And I'm thinking, oh man, I don't want to have to, don't want to lose all my progress. And I'm like, hey, to get to the gym once or twice, you'll be fine. Need to tell ourselves these things sometimes.
Okay, two short questions to finish. The first one is, what is your favorite lift?
I'm going to give you two answers there because I've been a powerlifter and a weightlifter. So let's go with two answers. For the powerlifts, it's the back squat. I was best at the back squat, so always enjoyed that one. It was by far the lift that I felt most confident in doing well in competition. And then as a weightlifter, it has to be the clean. I never really managed to get my jerk to the same levels, but I always felt very confident whenever I walked down to the platform that it would be getting to my shoulders and I'd be standing up with it just fine.
Fair enough. And the last question is where people can find you if they want to look into your work or they want to get in touch, ask a question or work with you.
Probably the place that I'm most active is Instagram, and my handle for that is at HJP Method, so my initials, Hayden Joel Pritchard, so HJP Method. And then my website is www.hjpmethod.co.nz. and probably the other thing, since you're listening to a podcast, I also run a podcast called the Stronger Dads Collective podcast, and that's been a lot of fun getting to talk to other dads who, you know, still want to keep active and kind of keep doing the strength thing. And so that's been a really cool place to talk about things like minimum effective dose and how people have managed to maintain their gains, which during what can be quite a stressful period of life. So I've really enjoyed that as a little sort of side project too. So shout out to that, since you guys are podcast listeners.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Hayden. It was a pleasure.
No worries. Thank you for having me.